Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Hi, this is Kelly Campbell. Welcome back to the Legal Nurse Podcast. We're lucky today. Our guest is Dr. Sharon Kelly. She serves as CEO for a number of corporations, including the Alliance for Global Narcotics Training. She also oversees related corporations in emergency, sports, and military medicine. While completing her bachelor's in pre-medical sciences at the University of South Florida, she served as a Tampa police officer, which afforded her firsthand experience in recognition of street and prescription drug abuse. She received her master's degree in drug chemistry from the University of Florida and PhD in toxicology. She is an affiliate faculty member with the University of Florida Clinical Toxicology Program, as well as the University of South Florida College of Medicine. She serves as a narcotics consultant for the Florida Attorney General Department of Health and numerous law enforcement entities. She lectures nationally and internationally to medical, legal, and corporate entities, including military and sports organizations, with respect to enhanced recognition and medical legal management of licit and illicit drug abuse. Wow, so impressive. Thanks for taking the time to spend with us today. Welcome.
Hi, Kelly. Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity of joining you and your audience today. I appreciate that.
Oh, I just thank you. You are one impressive woman. Thank you so much for joining us. I guess our audience knows we are going to be talking about opioids today, and how are you going to be able to help us today? We are going to learn so much. I guess one of our first topics, I have so many things that I know our audience is going to want to learn from you today, but I guess one of the things I'd like to discuss is understanding the opioid epidemic. I mean, there's so much to discuss, but what do you think we first need to learn or be made aware of?
I think as a legal nurse consultant, because I've had the privilege of working alongside nurses and as of late legal nurse consultants who are dealing with these problems, is the mindset of the prescriber. If I'm the legal nurse consultant and I'm reviewing a case where, for instance, a physician or mid-level has been accused of maybe over-prescribing, you know, that's been regulatory proceedings, criminal proceedings, you know, how do we know? I mean, how do you know that they weren't just trying to treat pain? So I think just understanding their mindsets from the beginning, you know, physicians, the mid-levels, prescribers in general are used to listening to their patients. And we all know that there's no pain-o-meter. You know, that's why this pain is not truly a vital sign. It's actually a symptom. So there's a lot of pressure, you know, placed on our prescribers to take care of pain. We think about pain scales and the patient satisfaction scores. And so there is a lot of pressure on prescribers. So when we understand the mindset, we know that they are going to be predisposed to prescribing pain meds, including opioids. You know, going back through our opioid epidemic and the manufacturers of these drugs, it's all coming out now that for a lot of the prescribers, there was misinformation given to them. So again, if I'm the legal nurse consultant, I'm going to say, I know they're kind of predisposed to prescribe. Do they have the proper education? Do they, you know, were they misled like many in their prescribing practices of drugs like maybe OxyContin, Percocets, Vicodin, which are all very good drugs, you know, and in their proper place, you know, they can be excellent at helping patients. So understanding the mindset, was their intent you know, to abuse. And there's a number of things that when we go into a doctor's office, you know, who looks at me and says, okay, so how do I become a good prescriber? What can I do that can keep me legally safe as well as my patient? And, you know, so several of the things that we recommend for our LMCs to look for when they're reviewing these cases is, first of all, do they have an actual training in pain management? One of our biggest problems right now is that we can refer to pain management, but you'll hear your patients, and I'm sure you've heard this too, Kelly, is, yeah, but I have to wait 9 months, you know, to get in with pain management. What am I supposed to do? And, you know, in big areas like my area in Tampa or your area in Pittsburgh, we probably have a larger number of those doctors who are specifically trained, but you get into more rural areas, you may not have that. So a lot of private practice, primary care physicians, you know, maybe, you know, physicians who don't have specialty in pain management, maybe orthopedics or rheumatology, are kind of being pressed again into prescribing these meds. So are they, quote unquote, dirty doctors, or are they just in a position that, you know, they are needing to take care of their patients? So when we talk to these prescribers, we say, you know, there are some things that, coming from a law enforcement background, you know, that I have, is what shows due diligence, which is, you know, certainly a term very familiar to your audience. So what would due diligence be? First of all, do I have education? Have I done my research on the drugs that I'm actually prescribing as far as abuse potential? Do I set up a pain contract with my patient? And then that pain contract does include things like routine drug testing. And what are you looking for as an LNC if you have the ability to see these patient records? What were they testing positive for? Was it the drugs that your clinician was prescribing, or were there other drugs involved, including illicit drugs like marijuana, cocaine? A lot of our doctors that we work with, if you come back with an illicit drug, they immediately terminate you from their practice. So are you seeing those things show up and the prescriber turned a blind eye to those? You know, things like criminal background checks, you know, and also criminal background checks for the staff in the prescriber's office. Are they practicing their due diligence to make sure that it's not just patients, but would staff have access to their prescription pads? And now with electronic prescriptions, people say, well, it's not that easy. It's easier, you know, because all they have to do is have their log on and they can jump into the computer. So does the doctor or other prescriber, do they do due diligence there? There's a number of things like psychological counseling they may build into the contract. So what we're saying is you've got a prescriber who's not just handing out a script. You've got a prescriber who's very concerned about the overall care of the patient. So if I'm the LNC that's reviewing this case, those would be some of the chief things that automatically I would look for in this doctor's history.
Okay. So just to recap, you know, making sure education is key. So, you know, dentists, and you even included orthopedics or rheumatologists. You do prefer a pain management physician is the preferred. Now, this is for long-term prescriptions versus...
Right. And yeah. It would be. And that's a great point is, are these... because you may have an attorney on opposing counsel who brings that up, and let's say that your LNC is defending a doctor who's been accused of misprescribing, you know, well, he wasn't even trained in pain management. Well, again, if you're in a rural area, what I would do as the LNC is I would bring to light how many pain management doctors are in our area. In other words, could this doctor have referred this patient to pain management? If you tell him the closest pain management is 372 miles away, then it's going to become incumbent on the ortho who's seeing the long-term chronic pain or neuro or unfortunately the primary care physician, they may have to act in that role. So even if they are not formally residency fellowship trained, have they taken CMEs? You know, have they demonstrated anything in their, you know, their CV that would indicate, I know I'm in a position where I'm having to prescribe. Have I done something to at least try and elevate myself into a role that I have better understanding of addiction, dependency of these medications. So in that case, like I said, I know that you deal with LNCs around the country. if there's a number of pain management, I would look at that and say, did you ever refer? You're in a pain management. But if the answer is my closest one is 300 miles away, then I think that you would have to take that into consideration, you know, and say, okay, we understand why you're having to fill in this gap where pain management is not accessible.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that clarification. And the next point, I just, for my sake, want to clarify the history of prescriptions. Are you talking not specific to that particular patient / claimant, but the history of prescriptions within his practice or that physician's particular practice?
And that's a great point to bring up, because one of the ways that in working with law enforcement, one of the ways that we have targeted doctors is what's the prescription count? You know, I know locally we've actually done a local regulation that any physician who is prescribing more than X opioid prescriptions per day has to register as a pain management clinic, you know, under the ordinance that we have here. And that was one of the biggest reasons. You did have prescribers who, again, may not be formal pain management doctors. So how many scripts are you giving out a day? And we would see this just egregious number. We had to actually come up with what did we think was, you know, a reasonable number of scripts per day. So that would definitely be something as looking at your physician's prescribing, because as part of one of my doctors told me, he said, you know, I always look for my DEA number, and I always look because they'll give you, you know, per DEA number. He said, we'd get, you know, a printout, and it wouldn't give the names, but for the DEA number, it would say how many scripts, opioid scripts, were being, you know, prescribed by these doctors. And that's what red flagged the DEA, you know, is like, oh my goodness, especially here in Florida. You know, I mean, we were the epicenter of the whole prescription drug issue. And of course, today we're talking about prescribed opioids typically, because that's who your LNCs would be looking at those cases. But that's what would stand out. We would have certain doctors who would represent 40% of all the opioid scripts in the whole state of Florida. So they stuck out like a neon light.
Oh.
So that would be one of the things, is looking at your prescribing, you know, histories of your prescriber, just to say, you know, do you show an overabundance of these medications?
Okay. So not just the abundance to a specific person, but within the practice. Okay.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
And it could be to the individual themselves, because, and there's where your pharmacies, let's say your LNC is representing a pharmacy. Now, I think a lot of the states have a prescription drug monitoring programs. I know here in Florida, I worked on that project to get that up and running. You know, now our pharmacists are required, you know, to actually see, you know, and it was great in quelling a lot of our doctor shopping. But if you saw one particular patient, you know, coming in with multiple scripts from Dr. X, that sent off red flags, you know, to a lot of law enforcement, and the pharmacists would report it. And now it's almost incumbent on them, you know, that if they see suspicious activity, that they are to report it to law enforcement.
Oh, yes. I wonder what the law is in the other states, if it'd be similar.
I think just in talking, like when I go to some of the PDMP conferences where all the states are represented, or at least, you know, a vast majority of the national conference, it sounds like a lot of us carry the same criteria, you know, for doctor shopping. Unfortunately, ours in Florida is not real time. It's a 7-day lag. But it's still been enough for our pharmacists reviewing the PDMPs to pick up doctor shopping. And from what I hear from other states, they have very similar, and some of them even more stringent, you know, rules than we do. Florida is moving toward, from what I understand, is moving toward our doctors prescribing opioids is now being mandated to actually check our database, where that was already so in other states. So we're moving toward that, you know, that obligation, because that was one of the questions with our PDMP, is with only 8% of the physicians checking the PDMP, our prescription drug monitoring program, was it as useful a tool? And that would be something else that I would definitely advise your LNCs to look at. Again, that could demonstrate due diligence. Does my prescriber and my the defendant, if the prescriber's the defendant, have they checked, do they make a routine check of the prescription drug monitoring programs? You know, when their patient comes in, do they check the PDMP and make sure that they don't see a history that would suggest, you know, opioid abuse or quote unquote doctor shopping?
Great. So that is, includes drug screening for, again, you had mentioned not just the drugs they're prescribing, but the illicit drugs, possibly psychological counseling, doctor shopping. What else do you consider efficient for due diligence? Just so we know what to look for in the charts.
I think having a contract in and by itself is huge.
Okay.
That has been a major factor in a lot of our civil litigation, is because, you know, as back in 2011, when, you know, the prescription opioid, the whole epidemic was really being, you know, coming to the surface, we held the first quote unquote summit that I can find, but numerous states are doing this now. But what we tried to do is we tried to bring law enforcement and medicine together by that. And during that time, there were a lot of steps being taken by the Department of Health, by the ONDCP, the Office of National Drug Control Policy, to actually send out to physicians suggestions of what to do to make their practices safer. And that, you know, you could Google, your LNCs could Google right now, what shows due diligence. And that was one of the things, is we tried to educate doctors, you know, a little bit more on those things to look for, how to do a pain management contract, how to do your routine drug screening. Those were all suggestions. In fact, there was even a book that came out to guide to responsible prescribers that was offered for free by our medical associations to all of the members of the medical associations in a state. Because as one of my doctors said to me, and I totally understand this, he says, Sharon, you know, we're not taught to disbelieve our patients. You know, if they tell me they're in pain, I just automatically think they're telling me the truth. So we started instituting CMEs on what does doctor shopping look like, you know, and I personally teach a whole conference on looking at physical examinations and what are some things that you can see in physical exam that would tell you, is this an ecstasy user? Is it a cocaine user? Is it a methamphetamine user? Do they even do exams? You know, and that has really been an issue, because so many prescribers, you know, taking care of patients in general, cut and paste. And that's a red flag when we've sat in DEA meetings, is when we see that 67 patients all had the exact same vital signs and, you know, their heart rates were all the same and they're all given an oxy, it really throws up a red flag. So is your doctor, forget the opioids, is he even, or is he even doing what would be expected as a standard of care? I mean, are they actually doing a physical exam? Are they asking about, you know, medical past, mental and medical history, even in families? One of our centers here, I thought this was an awesome approach for any of their doctors that are prescribing opioids for more than 3 months. They're required by the corporate structure to order a psychological evaluation of the patient to make sure that there are not drug abuse tendencies either in them or their families. Because the other concern, you know, obviously is it the patient who is the addict, or is it the patient's wife? Is it the patient's husband? Is it a family member, you know, who may have access? Because we don't just have the obligation to treat the patient. We also have a safety issue here, in that a prescriber has got to consider, you know, who else might be involved, who else might, you know, fall victim. Because kids, we had a very sad case, you know, here in Florida, of a doctor who was prescribing to a 26-year-old who told, apparently advised him, she was a chronic pain patient. So this patient leaves her OxyContin out, and her 3-year-old got it and died. You know, so there's such a huge responsibility of prescribers. So you know that she went to jail, but you know civilly, you know, who was looking at the other party involved was, let's go back and look at this prescriber. Why was a 26-year-old being given OxyContin? You know, I mean, did he or this doctor, he or she, do their due diligence? If this is a quote-unquote chronic pain patient at 26, I mean, we also look at certain diagnoses, like, was she in a massive car accident with a multi-trauma? or is she saying I have fibromyalgia? Again, something that we can't really prove. You know, so I always look at that. Did my prescriber do their due diligence in actually establishing this patient as a chronic pain patient?
This is Pat Iyer. Before we continue with the show, I'd like to draw your attention to a resource I created that will help you analyze emergency department cases. These are the types of situations that are high risk, that where much can go wrong in an emergency department. And some of those cases might involve overdose of opiates. Would you be able to separate out the bad outcome from the medical malpractice events? I wrote a book called Analyzing Emergency Department Medical Malpractice Cases. This book focuses on the highest risk aspects of healthcare. Emergency department care may be an issue in a personal injury case, a medical malpractice case, or in any case in which the patient required emergency services. Do you understand the complexities of how the emergency department functions? This book will take you behind the doors of the ER to get a bird's eye view of what goes on. There are several aspects of emergency department care that make it high risk for errors. There's an unpredictable flow of patients. There's constant pressure to quickly assess and treat patients. There's a lack of a previous relationship with the patient, and a huge variety in conditions and ages of patients. The public is increasingly aware of emergency department quality of care issues. Demand for emergency department services is increasing, and with it, cases against ER staff. In this book, you'll get an understanding of the roles and responsibilities of the emergency department related to triaging, assessing, diagnosing, and treating emergency department patients. It highlights emergency department liability issues and provides vital content to help legal nurse consultants analyze an emergency department medical malpractice claim. Order your copy of my book today at http://lnc.tips/ed. And use the code LISTEN to get a 25% discount on the book. That link again is http://lnc.tips/ed. And use the code LISTEN to get a 25% discount on the book. Now, let's return to the show.
Right. Oh, goodness. So, you know, when you talk about going back a few sentences here, talking about the psychological exam and making sure it's not just treating the patient, but the patient's family. And there's a whole new way for treating drug abuse and opioid abuse. You see on the news about new drugs of choice. Like, for example, I just read about gabapentin. So I'm sure that there's all kinds of things out there. What do we need to be aware of? Because you were talking about a lecture that you give on physical exams. Can you tell us a little bit about the new drugs of abuse or new physical exams that we should even be looking for?
I think, again, as far as if I'm reviewing whether my prescriber issued due diligence in this, is looking at the exams and asking them what specifically would you look for. For instance, some of the associated sequelae that goes with drug abuse, we've seen a major uptick in endocarditis with this because of the tricuspid valve vegetation from the IV drug abuse. If you talk to surgical personnel, they'll tell you that the increase in abscesses that are having to be debrided from IV drug abuse. In addition to endocarditis, we've seen a major uptick also in discitis. So this is the person that came in and told the prescriber, I have, you know, a very non-specific back pain. But if we did our due diligence and they're asking specifically for opioids, that would be due diligence as far as let's do a good physical exam. Do we need to send for CT? Because one of the things that we know that is a sequelae, you know, is the fact that the discs are literally, you know, in a very non-protected environment with regards to, you know, propagation of bacteria. So we see that. We see abscesses. Did the doctor treat them for an abscess at the same time they're asking for an opioid? You know, an abscess typically wouldn't qualify. Do you need OxyContin for, I just to breathe it an abscess? You know, and even if given, you know, given on a very short-term basis. So those are things. So is the doctor looking for the sequelae that's associated? And I keep saying doctor. I mean, in some states, you know, it can be a mid-level. Not all states allow mid-levels, but, you know, whoever your prescriber is. So that's some of the associated sequelae, the abscesses, discitis, endocarditis, MRSA, you know, that's associated with the open wounds. So again, when you start putting this in context with the patient who's asking for opioids, and one of the big things, I'm sure everybody out there, if they're a nurse, they know this, when they ask for the D drug specifically, is they want Dilaudid. You know, when we have a patient who comes in and says, I'm allergic to everything but Dilaudid, that just sends off red flags. So are these doctors or prescribers, are they savvy to that? You know, when people have a very specific drug, and, you know, I have argued that, though. I've had people say, well, the fact that they asked for a specific drug is indicative of drug abuse. I don't know that that's necessarily true. I mean, we have certain patients who just know what works for them, you know, and they're long-term. But the LNC should look at the overall picture. Is this a person who's been with this physician for 16 years? Their drug screens have always been negative. They were willing to sign a pain management contract. They do once a year maybe criminal background checks on them. They check the PDMP, and this person's been stellar. And they're not coming in with associated sequelae of drug abuse. I mean, I think we have to support our doctors, you know, in that case that they were responsibly prescribing. And the other thing I think to look for too is when you mentioned new drugs of abuse, gabapentin, Neurontin, we're seeing again a major uptick in patients that are coming into rehab. You know, that are getting hooked on that. Yeah, that's a big uptick. And also, too, this could be very tricky. So let's say the LNC is revealing, you know, is reviewing the patients that came into the doctor and said, I want Suboxone. I want methadone. I want to get off my opioid issues. At first glance, you might be thinking, okay, well, how could my doctor have been, you know, an overprescriber, or now the family is suing the doctor because this person died of a drug overdose, and they shouldn't have kept prescribing opioids to them. I can't tell you how many cases I've been involved with this. But the thing is that the doctor's defense are like, but they asked for methadone and Suboxone. What my comeback to that would be is your doctors need to be more educated. Just get on the web. And I just right this second, I pulled up Neurontin abuse. And there's listing after listing after listing, you know, of people abusing Neurontin. And Suboxone and methadone, have them pick it up. They can look at it. Their patients actually do abuse Suboxone. They abuse methadone because they are opioids. Yeah, and they may be partial agonists. I deal in court all the time with people who come back positive for opioids, and their defense counsel says, but they're on Vivitrol, so they can't be doing opioids. That's to bring them off opioids. Well, if the attorney or the prescriber will Google, and it's very simple, Google Vivitrol, what they will see is that a lot of patients have figured out how to beat that, either by giving an overabundance of the opioid, and now we're seeing so much of our drugs cut with other drugs like fentanyl and heroin, and especially for opioid users. You know, the problem is that if I test for opioids in my private practice office, and I'm the prescriber, and I see, oh, they're testing positive for opioids. Yay, I give them fentanyl pathos. You don't know that what you're seeing is heroin because you're not doing a GCMS. You know, all you're seeing are opioids, opiates. And that's another thing to look for is, do you actually screen for different opiates or opioids in that practice? Because, again, if you have something else show up, that could be indicative that you have an abuser. And therefore, you're going to have some civil liability if you continue, you know, to prescribe to them. But Suboxone and methadone are two of the things, the Vivitrol. And also, too, you know, is there any evidence of, like, non-prescribed opioids? Kratom has really been an issue lately. with people saying that they were taking kratom to try and come off of opioids. So is there anything in the record? Obviously, the doctor didn't prescribe that, but is there anything in the records where the doctor or prescriber noted that the patient was doing kratom?
Now, what's
okay,
kratom?
So that should be a red flag.
Sorry for interrupting, but
kratom? No, kratom is, it's from a tropical tree from Southeast Asia. The leaves have psychoactive compounds, you know, within them, and it works on the opioid receptors. So it's going to give them a very similar response to opioids. This has been, you know, concerns. Again, you can Google, and I'm not trying to say Google, like use that as your medical source, but when you Google, what I look for is I look for medical sources listed on Google. So in other words, I don't just necessarily go to a non-medical site, like maybe Wikipedia, which can still give you great information. But I mean, the LNCs should really look for these, but then go to peer-reviewed journals, and they will see that kratom, you know, especially in this case, kratom is huge. And I can tell you just within, I typed it in, and I had, I think, was it like 30 hits just in shops around within 10 miles of my residence that actually sell kratom. And where we live is we're outside of Tampa, but we're in an area where we don't have head shops. I mean, we're kind of a little bit more rural, and yet within that mile radius, because we have the university close to us, and you can just drive up and down the road where the university is. So again, put the profile of the patient together. Yeah, I think that would be my best advice for the LNC is can you know this patient, this person who is the object of the lawsuit that your doctor was prescribing to, and then do a profile on your doctor. You know, do they look legit? Are they doing the right thing? You know, but again, a lot of doctors may not even know what kratom is. So there's a website that we send all of our doctors to called Arrowid, which is Arowid.com. And it's a pretty amazing website. If you want to be in the know about what's going on in the drug world, you can go on. It's free of charge. I've never gotten anything negative, you know, by going onto their site, but it's mind blowing. They actually have a point and click chart where you can click on drugs and it tells you the most popular drugs. But if you look below, it actually gives you the organic chemistry experiments for how to make a lot of these drugs. You can go into the chat rooms where people can talk about what their effects were. You can look at the chemistry of the drugs. You can look for street names. And I always advise that. So maybe the doctor didn't know what kratom was, but the LNC looks it up and goes, oh my word. You know, that should have been a little bit of a sign. You've got somebody who says they do kratom and now they're wanting you to prescribe OxyContin to them. Red flags. You know, you may have an opioid abuser here.
Right.
So those are just some pearls that maybe your LNCs may not have considered. If they haven't done opioid investigations before, you know, it's definitely a mind-opening experience to really have to start putting yourself into the mindset of both the defendant as well as the plaintiff.
Yes, and I think, you know, here in Pittsburgh, I've read and listened on the news, they're getting more and more prevalent, and obviously on the national level, it has hit an epidemic as far as lawsuits and liability. So we do need to make ourselves better educated. Thank you so very much. Another epidemic that I think is coming up, you said Neurontin, and what are some other drugs that we need to be made aware of?
Well, I think very similar to opioids, you know, because so many people will tell you that they're doing heroin now, but they started on prescription opioids, that your prescriber has an obligation to treat disease. But what happens when that goes south? And probably the biggest ones that I deal with is the use of Adderall and Ritalin. We work with a lot with our university students, athletes, military. This is a huge thing. A corporate, my niece just graduated from a D1 university, a very large university, and a friend of mine's a former head of DEA, and we were all having dinner together the other night. She's just home from college, and she said, yeah, she goes, you can sit in the library and all you hear are people opening up their prescription bottles. She goes, it's almost a joke. She goes, and if you actually turn around and look, you'll see everybody taking the meds. and they're passing them around. And another very well-known university in our capital, actually, I was speaking with one of their students. I said, if you had to just give me a conservative guess, you know, is what you deem is how many of the students at the university are actually engaged in abusing Ritalin and Adderall, what do you think it would be? And I think she said it was like 80%.
Oh, and that's frightening. Oh, my.
That is frightening. And my niece supported that. She said, like I said, the whole library is filled with everybody passing around their Adderall and Ritalin. So, again, what happens from that, that the LNC says, okay, doc, you started prescribing this. Did you do your due diligence and assessing this patient truly for ADHD? Major League Baseball and a lot of the professional sports organizations have been, you know, questioned on this, you know, too. I think that they have set up some of the best regulatory practices for actually establishing through both psychological and medical doctors as far as, you know, keeping their sport clean. I applaud them for that. The U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, same way, they're setting up some very stringent but protective protocols. Is do we truly have ADHD, or are we just looking for performance enhancement? And for a lot of those college students, it could be the MCAT. You know, it's like, I won't take it after that, but I've got to stay awake for my MCAT. So if you're asking me what another epidemic that I think that we really need to address, it would be that.
Well, let's do another podcast. I know you're a busy
That would be fun.
I'm sorry to put you on the spot. Can we schedule you?
I would be honored. I just hope that your audience benefits from this, and definitely I'm happy to give you my information, that if any of them want to email me or they can call, you know, with questions. We have a consulting group here and really do specialize a lot in the opioids. So, I mean, we'd be more than happy to try and help in any way we can.
Yes, please before we sign off here, please let everyone know how we can continue to learn from you and grow and utilize your expert services.
I appreciate that opportunity, because networking is key. You know, just as you and I had discussed in, you know, previously, it's like, oh, what's going on in Pittsburgh? What's going on in Tampa? You know, it's great for me for people to say, hey, we have NBOM here now, or and we're in this city, so I would love that. They can just email me at my name. It's Sharon, Sharon.Kelley, Kelley, at agntconsult.org. So that's like agent, but without the E in the middle, and it stands for Alliance and Global Narcotics Training. So agntconsult.org. And they can also call our office. It's area code 813-949-9282. So, yeah, please do call and share. We'd love to meet, you know, new colleagues around the country.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time. It was very valuable.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you, Kelly. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks. And don't forget to like us on and join us again next week.
And I've got a phenomenal resource for you just waiting on LegalNurseBusiness.com. My online training and books are designed to help LNCs discover ways to strengthen their skills and their businesses. Check them out at LegalNurseBusiness.com. Many of us are lifelong learners who enjoy the chance to keep expanding our knowledge, just like the Book of the Month Clubs, my membership site, lnceu.com, gives you 2 online trainings every month. We have a yearly payment plan that saves you over $50 compared to paying monthly, and each program is hugely discounted. Look at the options at lnceu.com. And my last website, the lncacademy.com, is the coaching program I offer to a select number of LNCs. You get my personal attention and mentorship so that you can excel and build a strong foundation for your LNC practice. Get all the details at lncacademy.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on LegalNurseBusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.